Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mike Hill, former state representative out of District 1 in Florida. That's the panhandle. I'm filling in for Dr. Gene Youngblood today because he is still dealing with a family situation. His son, Gene, has been hospitalized and is needing our prayers. So I would ask the faithful listeners out there to please pray for Dr. Youngblood's son, Gene. This is something that's been going on for about 2 weeks now. I've been in continual prayer, and we have seen some mighty results because of that prayer. So your prayers are definitely needed. Please pray for Dr. Youngblood's son, Gene, who is currently hospitalized. And because of that, Dr. Youngblood has asked me to sit in for him today for this show, and it's my honor to do so. Dr. Youngblood has such a great show and such a great audience that it is indeed an honor for me, and I hope that I can live up to his expectations, and today that we could have a great discussion on the issues that are facing us today. I would encourage you to call in with your thoughts, with your questions, your comments. That call-in number is 904-831-0917. Again, 904-831-0917. We're going to be talking about a number of topics today. Those topics are going to include Afghanistan and that disaster that we are seeing happening before our very eyes. It is such a shame, but because it could be prevented. But we're seeing that. We're going to talk about Afghanistan. We're going to talk about masks, those being mandated either by businesses or in schools. We're going to talk about whether or not the U.S. does it still have a constitution. It's an article written by Judge Napolitano. We're going to be discussing that. We're also going to be talking about why are Americans so misinformed about COVID? So that and any topic that you would like to bring up, we're going to be discussing today. But before we get into that, I want to start with an incident that I participated in just last week here in Escambia County. I was sent a video by a concerned citizen and a school teacher about a video that the new superintendent in Escambia County, which, by the way, was an appointed position. Escambia County voted back in 2020 to not have an elected superintendent of schools, but instead to have a superintendent who was going to be selected by a committee and a school board. So going along with the wishes of the citizens who said they did not want to have an elected superintendent, that instead they wanted to have a superintendent selected by the school board and a committee. Now, that issue in and of itself, I understood the arguments on both sides. First of all, to not have the desire to want an elected superintendent, the arguments of that were that Not always do you get the best superintendent, but instead you get the best campaigner, someone who is good at politics and someone who is good at raising money for the campaign, which isn't always necessarily the one most qualified for the superintendent position. On the other hand, those who are arguing for it was that by doing a nationwide search, we could find a qualified person who could be our superintendent of schools. So the vote was taken, and the citizens decided that they wanted to have a selected superintendent of schools instead of one who was elected. So they went through the process, and they selected a Dr. Timothy Smith to be the superintendent of schools in Escambia County. So they're going along. The school year is beginning here. Now, I will say this, that Dr. Smith has not tried to mandate that children in Escambia County schools wear masks, even though that is happening in other places in Florida, in particular Broward County. No surprise there. That's almost a communist country down in South Florida. But Broward County has decided that they're going to make students wear masks against the executive order of Governor DeSantis. And we're going to talk more about that, because now we have the Biden administration and even a wealthy private individual who are going against Governor DeSantis' executive order to not force or mandate masks on all children. We'll get into a little bit more about that later. But back to Escambia County and this video. A video was sent to me that was called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Now, what does that sound like? Critical race theory, right? Even though this new superintendent said it is not a critical race theory. So they sent me this 22-minute long video that was mandatory for all school employees to watch, from teachers to administrators to those working in the lunchroom to those who are helping to remove trash, janitors in a school. They were all required to watch this video. And the video, put it in just one word, was horrific. It was terrible. What it did is it tried to put a one-size-fits-all solution to what the superintendent called an obvious and glaring achievement gap, which does exist in Escambia County, between white students and black students. It's a 34% difference in achievement. And so he wanted to close that gap. I actually called the superintendent, and we had about a 20-minute discussion on the phone. And as I was trying to intimate to him how insulting and demeaning and the video was, and how appalled I was that it was being showed, he interrupted and said, "Do you think that this achievement gap is acceptable?" I said, "Of course not. It's not acceptable." I said, "But the answer to it is not showing this video, which is clearly trying to institute critical race theory." What it did was, it was very demeaning to both teachers and to blacks, because it presented the children as victims, that they're victims of their situation, that they are victims of racism that is overtly or covertly being displayed all the time against them because of our society. And my response to the superintendent of schools was, okay, if you find that you have individual situations where there is a charge of racism or an accusation of racism, then you address that situation individually with the teacher, with the parents, with the student, with the principal of schools. You address it individually, but you do not with the one-size-fits-all, try to paint all teachers as being insensitive, as being racist, and unable to even recognize that they are, because of their, it's all systemic. It's built into the system, which is utter nonsense. So we had the superintendent trying to show this video, and I watched the video and was appalled. Let me give you an example of one very appalling feature. There were several throughout this 22-minute video, but this one in particular, which infuriated me, and it was a black middle school teacher who was explaining under the topic linguistics that white teachers and black teachers must learn to accept when black students do not speak or write with proper English. And she called it Ebonics, that it is simply a way of how they are expressing themselves and it must be accepted. And instead of trying to correct them when they are writing or speaking with Ebonics, that we must accept that that is how they speak and that is who they are, and we work with them with that. And I was furious. I was almost shouting on the phone with the superintendent. And this was my point to him. I said, English is the international language for finance. The more proficient you are with reading, writing, and speaking English, the more money you make. And to try and throw these children aside and not teach them proper English, but instead accept poor English, is doing them a terrible disservice and was going to do nothing to close the achievement gap. So a number of us went to the school board meeting the next day. It was not a meeting where they could vote on items, but where they were simply discussing various issues that came up on their agenda. And most of them were just worthless. It was a big waste of time. But I guess they try to do something to justify their overbloated paychecks. But at any rate, about a dozen of us showed up at that meeting and expressed our displeasure with this critical race theory video that this superintendent was trying to force upon all the school employees in Escambia County. I believe we were effective. The local ABC News affiliate was there, and we got two of the school board members to say publicly that they thought the video should no longer be shown, that it should be removed, and the superintendent of schools apologized for showing the video, saying that the response was not what he intended. I don't know. Okay, this meeting was on Friday. As of today, I don't know yet if the video has been pulled, but we are watching it closely. So that is just one issue that I want to bring to your attention, ladies and gentlemen, that in your own community, stay on top of what you see happening at your local school board, because they are trying to indoctrinate our children. They are trying to get our children to think that this is a systemically racist nation, when in fact the exact opposite is true, that we are a nation that is built on Judeo-Christian values, which abhors racism, that we instead champion the rights of the individual. We believe in freedom of speech, freedom of religion, equal treatment under the law, and a constitution that limits its government by the consent of the governed. That being said, by the way, if you would like to join in the conversation, again, the phone number is 904-831-0917. That being said, I came across an article recently in the New American. The New American is a magazine put out monthly, and they also put out daily notices by social media by the John Birch Society, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is a very good organization. I will admit I am a member of the John Birch Society, a proud member of the John Birch Society, because they love this country. They are patriots. They adhere to our Constitution. And what I like about them, which makes them different from a lot of other organizations, is not only do they educate you about the issues, not only do they stand for America, America first, they always provide a solution to what is a perceived problem. A lot of other organizations will tell you what a problem is, but they don't always come up with a solution. My friends at the John Birch Society always do that. So here's this article that Judge Napolitano asked, does the U.S. still have a constitution? Okay, in the Washington Times this past Wednesday, Judge Andrew Napolitano asked rhetorically, in a title above his column, does the United States still have a constitution? Though he never explicitly says yes, it is clear from his analysis that his question refers to a de facto abandonment of, if not de jure, elimination of the Constitution. Despite being ignored and circumvented, the Constitution is still the law of the land and still protects our freedom, needing only to be upheld and applied. So, Napolitano writes this, the Constitution does not permit the government to infringe upon personal freedoms, no matter the emergency or pandemic. Did you get that, ladies and gentlemen? The Constitution does not permit the government to infringe upon personal freedoms, even if they want to call it an emergency or a pandemic. That's at the national level and also at the state level. Here in Florida, people are touting how free we are as a state. We are more free than a lot of other states because of our Governor DeSantis, which has made it a point to try and end these lockdowns. We did end the lockdown and to remove these mask mandates. Even though we did have that in Florida for a period of about 5 to 6 months, which was unconstitutional both at the national level and also at the state level. Governor DeSantis issued and declared a state of emergency and issued a number of executive orders. When you read the Florida Constitution, our state of emergency is for such instances as invasion, natural disasters. A pandemic is not mentioned there at all. However, our governor and a number of other governors usurped their authority and instead instituted draconian lockdown measures, which we can see now in retrospect were a total disaster. We saw businesses bankrupt, closed, going out of business forever. A lot of people losing their jobs, unable to pay their bills. And then we find that they made the situation even worse by issuing an executive order that those who are renting property could not be evicted from the property, even though the landlords, the owners of that property, they did have mortgages that still needed to be paid. So now they're paying the mortgage. They're depending on that rent coming in to help pay the mortgage. But now, again, an illegal, I'll call it illegal, executive order issued by the government saying that you could not remove these renters for not paying rent. The renters could not pay rent because they lost their jobs because of what the government did, where the government was causing businesses to close. And then they would issue these government unemployment checks, which were never enough. They were only enough to sustain you. However, they were enough to stop people from going back to work even when work was available. that they could sit at home, collect these unemployment checks from the government, even though they were being offered jobs. They did not want to take those jobs because they wanted to sit at home and work. Okay, so back to the article of Judge Andrew Napolitano, does the U.S. still have a constitution? He writes, the founders crafted the Constitution both to establish the government and to limit it. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution specifies the powers of the Congress, the only branch of the federal government that may make law. But Congress may not make any law it chooses. In its lawmaking, it is limited to exercising only its enumerated powers. In other words, the government cannot just make any law and based on majority rule implement that law. No, it has to be based on what their stated powers were. They are limited and enumerated. Other protections against the abuse of power are found in the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, collectively known as the Bill of Rights. For example, the First Amendment explicitly prohibits Congress from violating freedom of religion, freedom of speech and the press, and the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Speaking of petitioning the government for a redress of grievances, that is exactly what we saw on January 6th. That was not an insurrection. It was not even a riot. It was people who went to Washington, D.C. because they were appalled at what they saw, what was obviously a flawed election that was full of irregularities, full of fraud, and what we are seeing now, proof of that coming out by patriots like Mike Lindell and others, who has taken a horrific hit, spending his own money, his business being deplatformed from places such as Bed Bath & Beyond, Costco, and other places. By the way, if you are a patriot and you have found of any place that has removed Mike Lindell's MyPillow, I would offer you to do what I am doing, and that is no longer shop with those businesses. Mike Lindell is a patriot, and he should be celebrated. And they are trying to intentionally hurt he, his employees, and his family intentionally by financially hurting them. And that's not right. Simply because he is standing up being a patriot and challenging the results of this fraud and flawed election. Now, back to the article in the New American. Judge Napolitano writes, the Ninth Amendment declares that the enumeration of rights in the first eight amendments shall not mean that there are no other rights that are fundamental, and the government shall not disparage those other rights. In other words, those first eight amendments in the Bill of Rights lay out what are rights that belong to the people, inalienable rights, God-given rights, not rights given to us by the government. And then what the Ninth Amendment says is that if one of those inalienable rights is not mentioned in those first eight inalienable rights, it doesn't mean that the people do not have it. They still do. And the government cannot disparage against that. And then the 10th Amendment goes on to state that the states have reserved to themselves the powers that they did not delegate to the federal government. The power belongs to the states and to the people. Okay, now, the article goes on. Without explanation or expansion, the judge used the term natural rights, assuming that his readers would automatically know what he was referring to. Natural rights collectively constitute the moral ability and sovereign authority of every human being to make personal choices, free from government interference and without government permission slip. Natural rights are God-given rights. These are rights that precede your birth. These are rights that belong to you by God. And some of them are mentioned in our Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and property, or the pursuit of happiness. All of that belongs to you before you were even born, while you are in the womb. So these belong to the preborn also. And that is why abortion is such an abhorrent practice that we have going on in this nation, a stain on this nation, and in the rest of the world. That we have people who will murder these preborn babies in the womb and call it their choice, when instead it is indeed murder. They have natural rights given to them by God for life, liberty, freedom, and a pursuit of happiness. Now, in an interview with the New American Magazine, Pastor David Whitney with the Institute of the Constitution gave a fuller description of the source of man's rights by quoting from the opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitles them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. And the Declaration clearly states that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, appeal to the Supreme Judge of the world, which, by the way, is God, with a firm reliance on a protection of divine providence, again, God, we mutually pledge each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. In other words, as expressed by Whitney's Institute, there is a God, our rights come from Him, and the purpose of civil government is to secure and protect our God-given rights. Now, on the day the Declaration was signed, Samuel Adams said this: "We have this day restored to the sovereign to whom alone men ought to be obedient." That means God. He reigns in heaven, and from the rising to the setting of the sun, may His kingdom come. Amen. Samuel Adams was one of our founding fathers, a patriot and a hero. John Hancock was also. And John Hancock wrote, "Let us humbly commit our righteous cause to the great Lord of the universe. Let us joyfully leave our concerns in the hands of Him who raises up and puts down the empires and kingdoms of the earth as He pleases." Ladies and gentlemen, soon we're going to be coming up on our break. I would offer you to call in with your thoughts, your comments, your concerns. This is Mike Hill. I'm sitting in for Dr. Gene Youngblood. The number to call in is 904-831-0917. Again, 904-831-0917. Stay with us after the break. Still a lot more to discuss.
This is Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood from First Conservative Baptist Church and Conservative Theological University in Jacksonville, Florida. To learn more, visit conservative.edu.